First, Hurricane Isaias hit the East Coast earlier this month, and on the West Coast, the Apple Fire burned in California. That comes as the nation is battling a new virus that's caused a global pandemic. And because of climate change, overlapping disasters like these may become more common. Our next guest has been reporting on how we can prepare for and recover from these simultaneous crises. Christopher Flavelle is a reporter with the New York Times. He covers how people, governments, and industries are trying to cope with the effects of climate change. Chris, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, talk about, first of all, this year's hurricane season. That's one thread in this story. It's been record-breaking in some ways, right?
Yeah, it's been record-breaking in terms of the number of storms and the speed with which we've gotten to X number of storms. There hasn't been, thank God, there hasn't yet been the kind of really severe storm that sort of shook FEMA and shook parts of the country in 2017 and 2018. I'm worried that I'll jinx it by saying that. But so far, it's been marked more by a series of many sort of small to medium scale storms. But I think what's worrisome is, as you just noted, it's never just one, right? It's either a storm or a fire or both or a derecho. And it's the sort of the accumulation of those events that's causing all these problems.
Yeah, that's the concern that you write about, that with climate change, each of those individual kinds of disaster, the storms or droughts or fires or hurricanes, become more likely. And that raises the risk of dealing with one or two or and throwing a pandemic too, one or two or three things at the same time. Can you talk about what we're seeing in terms of these odds getting stacked against us?
Yeah, no, it's the problem isn't so much, as you know, it's not just any individual event. The problem is, if you get a local emergency management office or even a county or even a state that can handle one of these events, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, they might have been fine, right? You can get through a year with the money you have and the staff you have, and it's going to be okay. The issue is, if your staff start to get worn down and you start to say, oh, we need more help, and you go to other neighboring jurisdictions, you say, send your firefighters, send your emergency managers, send your public health officials, because we are swamped. The problem is, if the next county over is swamped and the next state is swamped and the federal government is swamped, all of a sudden you've got a capacity problem, right? Which sounds like a dry way of putting it, but people who need help can't always get it in this kind of situation. And I think the federal government and local officials I talked to all have the same concern. And that's what happens if we get walloped by a few big disasters all at the same time again, and there's not enough help to go around. And we haven't really had to deal with that yet. And it's one of those problems that is presented by climate change, and there isn't really a good answer.
Let's turn to that federal level now. You write some about FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Are they getting stretched then?
Yeah, unquestionably. And FEMA will say, you know, we've done a good job staffing up. We can a good job sort of being as ready as we can. And I'm not aware of any sort of clear examples of FEMA dropping the ball this year. But I think as hard as they try to sort of build up their reserves of staff and pace everything well, they are still facing a mission that they were just not designed for, which is to deal with this many disasters all around the country at the same time, on top of COVID, which, as they will tell you, is the first 50-state disaster they've had to deal with. So it's a mission that is hard in the best of times with the best people. And the problem with climate change is it's going to get worse. And I think it raises a real question about whether this model of having an agency that has only a few thousand people is enough to handle these kinds of disasters.
We're talking to Christopher Flavelle from the New York Times, talking about climate change raising the risk of having not just one disaster, but multiple disasters going on at the same time, and the stress that puts on our emergency management and response at the federal, state, and local levels. Is anybody, Christopher, talking about a new model, a change in the way we think about our risks and try to manage them?
Yeah, look, I don't want to sound overly defeatist here. There are definitely things you can do, but they tend to be pretty sweeping changes. Brock Long, who used to run FEMA and ran FEMA through the really severe years of 17, 18, and 19, His whole push, and I've heard him say this to me a few times, is in general, communities that are vulnerable to storms, which is most of them, tend to probably rely too heavily on this idea that if they build in a vulnerable place, or if they build homes that aren't really, really resilient, and something bad happens, someone's going to come by and bail them out. And his point, and others make the same point, is you might at some point have to change that mindset and say, maybe we shouldn't build near rivers. Maybe we should build homes that are going to better withstand hurricanes or floods. Maybe people should have more insurance so they can handle the damage if their homes get hurt. And this idea that you have to put meaningful constraints on where and how you build homes, that's been a really tough message for a lot of reasons. People don't want to be told not to build somewhere. But I think as this cost grows and the disasters increase, that argument becomes harder to ignore. And so one of the things I'm watching is, will the increase in disasters change the way American communities look and where people build homes? Because there might be too many disasters to recover from.
Another point you raise is that a consistent theme, whether we're talking about COVID-19 or who gets hit the worst by our hurricane, it's not the same for everybody. Some people, lower income people, more at risk, people of color, black people in particular, more at risk. Can you talk about how these things don't hit everybody equally?
Absolutely. It's a huge problem. One of the things that we know from experience, that it makes sense intuitively, is that you've got lots of communities around the country that are just naturally more exposed to disasters. They could be built on lower-lying land that is harder to protect. They could be homes that aren't as expensive, so weren't built to the same standards. Often those are communities of color. Often they're low-income communities. And then when you get a disaster, all of a sudden those communities are really dependent on federal or state or local aid. If there isn't enough aid to go around, which is not a stretch these days, or if that aid is not enough to rebuild, you are left sort of to your own devices, right? And I think what we're seeing is communities that don't really have the wealth to begin with to rebuild are then left to compete for an increasingly stretched amount of money. And the problem is they don't really have a great backup. So I think one of the inequities in this country that's getting harder to ignore is the inequitable exposure to natural hazards, and climate change is making that worse.
Another thing that hits me as you're talking, you know, if I was a local government leader thinking, wow, gosh, it sounds like I need to invest more in, you know, getting ready for a disaster like this. Hearing that at a time like now with COVID, with the economic downturn, all those units of local government are taking an economic hit. That's another source of, I guess, stress on the system, right?
Yeah, you know, it's a real issue right now, and one that I'm watching and other reporters are watching. A lot of the spending projects at the state and local level to protect people from disasters, you know, flood walls, better drainage system, better stormwater management, those tend to be expensive. Those are big ticket infrastructure items, and those tend to be the ones that get canceled or shelved when money is tight. So I think there's a real risk that the downturn from the pandemic will really set back this this long-term push to make people and communities more resilient to storms. And the problem with that is it's not clear to me how long that downturn might last. No one knows. And so you could have, in theory, years where you lose that kind of investment, and the result is even as storms get worse, people's protections against them also get worse. It's a real bad mix.
Any kind of silver lining you can lead us with, Christopher, that you know, people are at least waking up to the problems you're raising?
You know, one thing I hear from people is that there's a benefit to raising awareness, that as more homeowners and potential homeowners hear that this is an issue, they'll think harder about what they can do. Maybe they'll look harder at what kind of insurance they have. They'll think about getting flood insurance. They'll think about, you know, increasing the flood protection on their home. They'll look more carefully at where they buy a home. And probably that's what it comes down to, especially as governments have to pull back a bit. You probably are putting more weight on individual decisions. So, yeah, the silver lining probably is at some point all the stuff in the news makes people think, what is my exposure and what can I do? Probably that's a good thing. The concern is that probably won't go far enough. There's some problems that are too big for individual homeowners to deal with. But certainly more attention and more awareness probably is going to help.
Chris, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
Christopher Flavelle reports on how people, governments, and industries are trying to cope with changes brought on by global warming and the risks of overlapping disasters in the midst of climate change.